Hey Ingrid, why don't we just start a roll call and people will join and will give us a sense where we're at as well. So welcome everybody. This is our final consultative committee meeting for 2022. We do have some new members because we are post municipal election. So for Toronto and Mississauga, they have done their reappointments from a councillor perspective. Brampton has not yet. And we also don't have the resident appointments yet. Those will be early next year, we expect. So, but we do have some new folks we'll be introducing. So, Ingrid, I'm going to turn it over to you if you can do the roll call, please.
All right. So voting members that are attending are Badar Shaman from the Brampton Board of Trade, Avery Campbell from ACTA. I'm just watching the list in case anybody jumps on. Stephen Tufts from the Brampton, Mississauga and District Labor Council, Eileen Lucy from Toronto Board of Trade, Jonathan Weedle from York Region, and Savik Ramke from Seneca College. And I don't think there's any more voting members, so we're kind of short on quorum. Resource members that are here are Amanda Chum from Transport Canada, Susan Acton Gervais from National Airlines Council, James Antler from the Ministry of Tourism. He's here on behalf of Caroline Polgrabia, and Jeffrey Pereira from MTO. And I believe that is it. Oh, and John Davidson is here, and Councillor Morley from the City of Toronto. So that gives us quorum.
Welcome. Well, welcome. So Councillor Morley is the new alternate member from the City of Toronto. So I'm not sure if it's councillor or staff because I just see the name coming up, but welcome to our meeting today. Councillor Crisanti also has been put forward as the city's nominee. So we'll welcome him if he's able to join later to this meeting, or maybe perhaps he won't be able to join till next year. The agenda was sent out with the minutes from the last meeting, so I just want to make sure that everyone's comfortable with the agenda for today. If I can ask for a motion to approve, and I only see Jonathan on my screen, so I may need to see hands up from someone. So,
Bedard,
Jonathan,
moving in.
all right, thanks, Badar. Jonathan, can I have a second? Any
Yes.
thank you. Any comments or conversations about the agenda? Any items anyone would like to add before we put the motion table for the table? All right. So if there's no opposed, we'll carry the agenda for today. The minutes were sent out for the September 13th meeting as well. There were a number of items that were noted already and have been followed up on. In terms of things that we promised to do. So I won't go over those because they appeared in the materials that were sent to you. One thing that we do want to do is we'd like to send out a survey early next year for you to talk about how you'd like to proceed with these meetings. You know, it's there's no debate that, you know, working virtually has had its pros and its cons. For those who are sitting in York and Durham region, it's a much easier drive to your home office to click and join us. And so we do appreciate that. But we would like to just check in with committee members on the appetite for in-person versus virtual. We, of course, would like to maintain an opportunity, if we do go the virtual route, to have at least one in-person meeting in a year where we go on a tour, go to one of our members' locations, or something where we actually physically get together in person. And I think that's probably important for us to do. And we also have the meeting dates for next year that we set aside, but we will send those out with the survey as well, so we can put those into your calendars and you can check those. So with that, if I can get a motion to approve the minutes from September the 13th. All right, thank you, Jonathan, to move the minutes. The seconder, please. I'm going to pick on somebody soon if no one puts their hand up. Badar, were you at the meeting?
Yes, I was. Okay, so
All
I'll
right.
second it.
Thanks very much. Any concerns with the minutes as they were circulated? Okay, we'll consider those approved then. And I did notice, Mr. Batty, you've joined our meeting as well. So welcome. Hope you're well. That takes us to our, hi there, our consultative committee update. And so Fares, over to you. This was circulated to you already, but Fares, if you can just hit some of the highlights of the committee update, please.
Thank you, Laurie. Hi, everyone. I hope some of you had a chance to read the consultative committee newsletter that went out yesterday. So a couple of articles that stand out for me are the future of COVID-19 surveillance, and it's happening at Toronto Pearson. This article discusses a new report from the Innovation Economy Council, which highlights the role global airports are playing in early detection of new variants through artificial intelligence-driven early warnings, waste water surveillance, and more. There's also another article that mentions how the GTAA announced a major milestone in its environmental sustainability goals. Pearson Airport received a level 4 transformation designation through Airports Council International's, or ACI, Airport Carbon Accreditation Program, ACA program, something we're particularly proud of and a milestone on our decarbonization journey and net zero 2050 target. Another article mentions the YYZ Express Lane for domestic and international departures that was recently introduced at Pearson. You can now reserve a time to go through security up to 72 hours before your flight or while at the airport. Just simply add your flight details, number of people in your group, and select the time.
I'm in.
Mute it.
Oh, hello, sorry. Awesome.
Yeah,
how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. It's lovely to see you. We've just got going.
Oh,
we're
great,
into the
great
agenda, but we'll make
oh, no
sure
worries
to note your attendance. And it's nice to see you again. And welcome to the Consultative Committee.
Thank you so much. I just had Amanda, who's with me. Amanda Arnone, I think she's on as well. And she
yes,
assisted
awesome
me in getting on the meeting here. So
perfect. We're
that's
just
great
going through the committee, the committee update. And so we'll turn it back to you, Fares.
No, I was just sharing here the last article that I think you should read, which is finally, we're proud to share that the rehabilitation of runway 06L24R, the airport's second busiest runway, has successfully concluded on time and on budget. So thanks to the many employees and external partners who were involved in delivering this project, the life of the runway has been extended by 30 years. So these are the articles that stand out for me, but I encourage everyone to take a look at all the newsletter. Thank you very much for your time.
Great, thank you very much. And I mean, I think that final one is a huge undertaking. So a lot of thanks goes to both Transport Canada that financially contributed to support that project, but as well to the work of our community relations team and our neighbors who, you know, put up with some of the changes that resulted in terms of changes of flight paths. But I think because of the really solid outreach, everyone understood it was needed and it was handled very well. So good to have that one behind us and completed within 8 months. So we're going to move on in our agenda. We have two presentations today. The first one is an operational update, but also a bit of a preview in terms of what we're doing and getting ready for in terms of the holiday travel season. And the second is a presentation on an initiative to try and support workforce and getting more workers available and ready to work through what's called a Rake Ready program. So the first presentation will be delivered by Michael Mandel and Atul Sharma, who you both know very well. They're both in the government relations team at Pearson. So I will turn that over to you. And then the next presentation, Robin Connolly will be delivering.
Perfect. I don't know. Yeah, there's the deck right there. Thanks, Laurie. So maybe we can move right into it, Fares, and we'll move right to the next slide. As many of you, you know, we all read the newspaper, watch the news, and I think it's fair to say we've had some pretty challenging months, especially over the summer months and into the fall, as passenger traffic has rebounded at Pearson and as the lights have come back on, so to speak. So here are Q3 2022 results. We saw 11.2 million passengers through the terminals in Q3, which is an increase of 135% year over year, the same quarter in 2021. But you can see that gray line in the back of the chart there represents 2019 passenger levels. And so you can see we're still pretty well below where we were in 2019 when we were a 50 million plus passenger airport. In Q3, had some good news around net income, which increased year over year in that quarter, but just over $73 million. But in total, we're still carrying a significant amount of debt. So $6.8 billion of debt, which we added to quite considerably throughout the pandemic. And you can see, while the debt decreased in the third quarter, our debt decreased by roughly $355 million. We're still $440 million greater in debt than we were in 2019. Next slide, please. So as I said, Pearson went from one of the world's most shut down airports, and in a matter of weeks, you know, passenger traffic was rebounding, and the challenges that come with that, right? So we're positioned to grow further. We're positioned to get back to that 50 million passenger airport we were in 2019, and grow beyond that. And we need that kind of growth requires investment. So this means, and you'll hear it throughout the presentation, it's investment in infrastructure, digitization, innovation, and we have a plan to decarbonize and get to net zero by 2050. And we're not alone, right? When you look around the world and how the aviation sector is advancing, the competition is heating up and we're competing with other major international airports. When you look just south of the border, as an example, in the U.S. throughout the pandemic, the U.S. government invested $40 billion in U.S. airports. Major upgrades, infrastructure upgrades are underway at LaGuardia, O'Hare, LAX. I'm talking about multi-billion dollar upgrades. And you can see we haven't had the same kind of investment to the same extent at all in Canadian airports. And we've dropped from being the 19th most connected airport in the world to from the sixth most connected airport in the world to the 19th most. So a considerable drop, and that's largely due to underinvestment. Can we move to the next slide?
Hey, Michael, just for the room's benefit, I think there's a typo on that slide. I don't think LAX is 66 billion. No, I think it's six billion.
It's 6 billion. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's a lot of dough if it's 66
yeah,
billion.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it was 66 billion. And the total was 40 billion. But there is some good news, I would say. And that's, you know, essentially our airport partners have come to the table and have made some dramatic changes to improve passenger flow and efficiency. You see CATSA, the federal government agencies, CATSA, CBSA, and NAV Canada have hired more staff. The federal government has eliminated all COVID-related travel measures. You can now fill out your customs declaration digitally on ArriveCan, the ArriveCan app, and the U.S. Customs has introduced the same advanced declaration that you can do through the mobile passport control app. So I encourage everyone to download those apps and use those services. It's getting people through customs more efficiently. And the bottom line is we need all airport partners to provide consistent, repeatable service that gets passengers through the airport in internationally competitive times. Can we move to the next slide, please? So to that end, the GTA is investing and innovating to expedite travel. And we've done this throughout the pandemic. So $4 million, as an example, invested in new e-gates and kiosks. We've launched YYZ Express in November, so you can now pre-book your time through security. Gives you a window of time, and I'm quite frankly plan to use over the holiday season, and allows you to have an appointment essentially to go through security. So that should be super helpful. And we have a live wait time dashboard that allows passengers to further plan ahead. It's about adding, transparency and predictability to the passenger journey. Next slide, please. So I think Atul, I'm going to hand it over to Atul here, and he's going to pick it up and walk you through the rest.
That's great. Thanks, Michael. Just to build on what Michael was saying is that we have lost a lot of competitiveness, and we have seen that the other airports are internationally will move ahead, but we are trying to figure out sort of how do we move from operational and financial stability into the future. And so we can't do it alone. And we have made some specific recommendations to address some of the labor shortages and the challenges that remain with passenger flow. So as Michael was talking about, as we're going into the holiday season, we have a number of different tools that have come online, mobile passport control, the advanced decoration, and YYZ Express, as well as the real-time dashboard as well. But the reality is that the resiliency of the system continues to remain fragile. We've seen large spikes in, people getting COVID. We've got that sort of what they call the triple threat in terms of seasonal flu is going around, as well as our RSV. So we want to ensure that we have enough labor to cover off all of the checkpoints that we have, the government checkpoints that are there, as well as with NAVCAN. And we've been working with our partners to ensure that that is going to be the case. But, we live in Canada, so we will have weather. So those, those items will be there. We can expect that. And we're going to do our best to ensure that we can get through the holiday season as much as possible. But just so that people keep in mind that it is continues to be fragile, and we are working our way through that. Some of the things that we have been talking specifically with the government about as well over the last little while, you've probably seen in the paper the issue with respect to Nexus enrollments. The offices continue to remain closed in Canada, and we're working with the government and encouraging both the Canadian government and the U.S. government to get to the table and to find a way to address the issue. We have seen some pilot programs on the land border, which are positive, but we need to see a solution to the air border as well. So we continue to push for that as well. We have also been speaking with CATSA and the government about a trusted traveler program. And so they are interested in putting that in. It would be similar to TSA PreCheck, where you can keep your liquids and gels and your laptop in your bags. And as you've been vetted in advance, you're considered to be a low-risk traveler. So while you would still have to go through security, but it should be processed much faster. And there's also a relationship between the Trusted Traveler Program and Nexus in order to ensure that there is enough flow through the Trusted Traveler lane, addressing the 500,000 plus applications within Nexus will help to, once those people have been approved, they can go into the Trusted Traveler Program. So we are working on a pilot with them ourselves in Vancouver coming into the fall. And we're hoping to have something in place full time by summer of 2023. We've also, Michael alluded to this as well, the international students. And, every year in September and January, we see a flood of international students coming in. And they go through a process where they receive a study permit as well as an entry permit. We've been discussing with the government that there should be a way to approve the study permit in advance of coming to the airport or immediately after arrival. It's not necessarily something that has to happen at the airport, so we're looking for a change in there. And at the same time, we are pushing the government to look at digitization of the entire visitor visa process as well. CBP continues to be an issue. We do see wait times in the pre-clearance area of in excess of 60 minutes. And we are working with the U.S. government to find a solution to that in terms of getting the number of resources back at the airport as they had pre-pandemic, opening the pre-clearance hall to the same hours that they had pre-pandemic as well, and looking at the throughput, at how quickly they are able to process as they did during the pre-pandemic era as well. So we've also talked to the federal government about this idea, as Michael talked about, sort of the need for infrastructure investment. So how do we do that? We didn't get what the U.S. received. So what do we look to the future to do? So our solution or our recommendation that we put forward is a reinvestment of the airport rent. In 2019, Toronto Pearson paid about $170 million to the federal government in rent. And if we were able to keep that, or at least keep a significant portion of that over a 10-year period, that would be a $1 billion investment within Toronto Pearson, and bringing it back to its competitive level and making it a world-class airport again, and hopefully getting back to that position of being the sixth most connected airport in the world as well. I'm not going to spend too much time on the rake-ready pool of workers, but as I know, there's another presentation on that. But we are pressing the government to work with us to help get that established also. Next slide, please. So those are some of the immediate things. You may have seen the Minister of Transport is conducting an air sector review, and so we are actively engaged in that. And so we've put forward sort of three broad themes. How do we improve the passenger experience through digitization? And so we just talked about some of those specific opportunities that are available for digitization and making the border experience both safer and faster as well. How do we use data and share data amongst airlines, airports, and the federal government to not only improve the passenger experience, but also to make better decision and planning decisions for the future as well? And then the last one is continue to push on rent reinvestment and talking to the government of sort of where that money could be spent, investing in the passenger journey and decarbonization and, of course, infrastructure development. So that, I think that was the end of the slides, but happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Atul. Councillor Crisanti, your question. If you're speaking, you might be on mute. We still can't hear you. So maybe while...
Yeah, my fault. Sorry,
I
got to take it off mute, don't I, to make it work? I was wondering why you couldn't hear me. Here I am screaming even louder, but no, it's me. So thanks, Laurie, and great presentation. I am really pleased to see that we're always very focused on improving passenger experience. But my question may be, I believe, I'm not sure, was this presentation or the previous one, having to do with downloading the app for the customs declaration. So currently there's no automated way of doing that, right? Is it still done in the traditional sense? And what about for those people who are, you know, maybe some older senior people or that who don't have that, ability to do that? How do we handle that in the with the same old declaration form that we always use? Or so
no,
what's,
I mean, so the app is available in the App Store, so you can download the ArriveCan app and use it. It's no longer mandatory like it was during the pandemic. So part of the issues with respect to ArriveCan was the way it was being used during the pandemic around health questions and all those requirements. And I think that really,
oh, right. Okay.
So all that is gone. And all that's left today in ArriveCan is this advanced declaration. So remember those cards you would get on the plane that you filled out?
Yes.
Well, you no longer get that paper form on the plane. So now your options are twofold. You can do that at the kiosk when you get to the airport, or if you download the ArriveCan app, you can do that in advance using the app, which means it takes you half the time at a kiosk and will speed you through. And a little tidbit for you guys, starting later this week, there's actually a dedicated line that will be available for those who do complete the advanced declaration. So it'll make your movement through the customs hall even faster. So we are encouraging people to use the ArriveCan app because it will speed them through. If there are individuals who, you know, don't have a smartphone or just don't have the capabilities to download the app for whatever reason, they still can use the kiosk. And, you know, if we spread out the flows because we've got more people moving more quickly, that makes every line a little bit faster as well. So hopefully it helps everyone.
So what happens if by chance you miss the kiosk and so you don't fill it out at that point? Is there still the option to do that on the plane before you arrive?
No, the forms are no longer handed out on the plane. So you can't, there is really no way to miss the kiosk. If you end up seeing an officer without it done, they'll send you back to a kiosk.
Got it.
And there are staff on the ground that are Pearson staff that help people who are having challenges working the kiosks, but it's fairly intuitive.
Okay. And do you have any information on what is the current wait time to process passengers through the airport going on any flight? Or I guess there's different wait times for international versus domestic. That, I gather, has improved tremendously from what it was a short few months ago when there were a lot of delays, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually one of the challenges we have in the system that there aren't standards that government agencies and all parts of the ecosystem are accountable for delivering against. So when you're checking in to go for a flight and you go through your screening, the security screening, which is CATSA, they're funded to process 85% of passengers in 15 minutes or less. But that's a national average, so you kind of get death by averages. So we've been pushing for some time for a much higher standard that other countries have, which would be about 95% in, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or less, but to do that in all hours of the day, including our peak hours. So that's what we would like to see as what CATSA could deliver. And then on the inbound flow, so when you're coming into the customs hall, they have, it's not really a standard, they have a processing time of sort of 90% of passengers processed in 20 minutes or less. And I mean, I would say for the most part, that seems to be where we're at these days. There are peak hours where we're still having to hold people on airplane if there's a backlog, or meter people into the hall because of crowds and we can't overcrowd the customs hall. But those are some of the tactical things that happen in the moment. But generally speaking, we're working very hard with our agency colleagues to make sure that they're staffed to support the demand. And particularly coming up to the busy holiday travel, I know CBSA, for example, makes use of summer students and a number of students who, you know, continue to go to school and live in the Toronto area, continue to work part time. And I know they've brought back some of those students to work over the Christmas break as well. So they're sort of bulked up that way, and also use overtime dollars to help support the busy days. So working very hard to make sure that we don't have lineups and delays over the holiday peak travel period.
Thank you, Laurie. Thank you.
There's another hand up, and let me just see who that is. Avery Campbell. Go ahead, Avery.
Thank you for the excellent presentation. I have a couple questions relating to the Nexus program. Looking for any insight that you can share. So, from what I understand with respect to the current negotiations between Canada and the United States, is that the principal reason why sites are being closed is the offsite locations where American officials don't have protection from potential prosecution and the like. What's the holdup, though, on reopening in airport Nexus enrollment centers, where, from my understanding, those officers would have that protection, or is my understanding incorrect? Second question relates to what you spoke about in terms of the potential negotiation for a frequent flyer program. Is there a discussion on just reopening the original CANPASS program? I know it now exists for corporate aircraft, but it seems to me that Canada already had a system for domestic frequent travelers that it abandoned in its concentration to Nexus program. So what's going on there? Why not we just reopen the CANPASS infrastructure? Thank you.
Those are two great questions, Avery. Thank you. So on the first one, it's the same argument. The enrollment centers, even at airports, are located in pre-secure areas and distinct from the pre-clearance sites. So it's a different office space. And so the footprint is not, you know, captured in the pre-clearance agreement between Canada and the US, which is a treaty that sets out those protections that you spoke about. And so the American government has indicated that they're not going to have US officers come back into the enrollment centers until they can have those same protections in the enrollment centers. There are workarounds, as Atul mentioned. So there's two pilots that are happening at the land border that are trying to figure out ways to deal with the backlog and getting the enrollment into Nexus restarted and getting around those challenges. Because, you know, when you're talking about a treaty issue and agreements between two countries, those issues can take time to resolve. And so we're really pushing to see if there's creative ways to try and deal with the getting the program back up and running. And if you think about it, it is a little archaic that to think that to get a Nexus card, you physically have to see a Canada and a US officer together at the same time in the same room physically. And there's got to be in 2022 a more technological way to complete that. And so I think that's where we're hoping this moves. And so that's what we're sort of pushing for, some creative solutions. On your second question, gosh, my brain is going back to CANPASS. That's many years ago. But my recollection, CANPASS was a program for border crossing, but it was not a program for CATSA, was it? Atul, do you remember? I don't know if anyone's on from Transport Canada.
I'm here, but this predates my time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to dig into that because it's been a long time since I've even heard CANPASS mentioned, and see if that maybe is an opportunity. There are a number of pilots underway. We're trying to drive change by sort of trying things, see how they work in the environment, learn from them and see what can stick. And so there is a pilot at CATSA going on out in Vancouver. There's one happening in Ottawa. One has started at Pearson. And so some of the learnings from that we're hoping can end up with what we would call more of a true trusted traveler program. You know, in Canada right now, when you're going through a trusted traveler lane at CATSA, there's not the same kind of benefits, even though you've been pre-vetted and deemed to be a trusted traveler. You really just get in a queue jump, if you will, where you can sort of get into a lane, hopefully with passengers who know what they're doing. And so the lane moves more quickly because there really aren't many differences in terms of the actual screening process. So what we're looking for is to actually get some regulatory changes through Transport Canada so that if you are part of a trusted traveler program, deemed a low risk traveler, that when you actually get into that lane, the screening process is different for you, so that you will move more quickly because you have been pre-vetted. But we will dig in and get back to you and throw something in the minutes on that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. And I just have a couple follow-ups. One thing that I've personally experienced, and I think it's going to be the experience more and more as folks have more expired Nexus cards, is agents at the line who are questioning your eligibility for entry into the expedited line because of the expiration. You know, you've passed expiration date, you know, it's been elongated, a lot of agents aren't aware. So it seems that perhaps an extended education campaign would be beneficial. I've experienced this in Toronto, I've experienced in Ottawa and in Vancouver. Though I don't want to put my anecdote into a formally official policy. And then the other comment is I also have noticed, I've seen this for a couple people, myself included, where their Nexus renewals have been pending. You know, you have to book an appointment, And then over the past couple of weeks, folks have just been getting, oh, you're approved, you're good to go, your card will be coming in the mail. Is there a policy change going on where they're going through low-risk applications and deciding we don't need to send you an interview anymore?
Yeah, my understanding is that Canada and the U.S. are working together to deal with renewals. And so there is a process underway to try and deal with, these aren't new applicants, there are people that have renewals. And so if you missed getting your application in before your renewal date, or even if you got it in before and you're still waiting, my understanding is they are working to process those. And so that's good news, actually, to hear that some of those are starting to get pushed out and people are getting their cards.
Thank you.
It's really only the brand new applicants who should, you know, that are sitting on the wait list. Any of the folks doing renewals should be able to get through.
So, Lori, it's Ingrid. I don't comment, but I did hear on the news last night that they're reopening two Canadian centers for Nexus. And I just found an article. Apparently, they're schedule interviews by appointment only at Lansdowne, Ontario, Thousand Island Bridge, and Fort Erie, Ontario, the Peace Bridge enrollment centers.
Yeah, those are the two land border pilots. And so the way that works is if you show up at the land border, at Lansdowne and you're crossing, there's a communication that there's happening that you would do your interview with the Canadian officer. You would cross the land border and you would within 30 minutes do your interview with the U.S. officer. So those are happening at those two land borders. The other one's at Buffalo. It just doesn't work the same in the air mode, unfortunately. So if anyone wants to cross the land border to get your Nexus card, there's a way to do it. Mm-hmm. It seems like a big effort, though. We would like to solve the problem in the air mode. Yeah, thanks, Ingrid. Any more questions for Michael or Atul? So with that, Robin Connolly has been patiently waiting in the sidelines. So I want to introduce my colleague, Director Robin, who... I think many of you may know already, but Robin has been leading a lot of our workforce development programming, and her team came up with this really brilliant idea to help support getting access to more workers in a timely way, and some who have particular challenges getting through the process of getting their rakes on the airport. So, Robin, I will turn this over to you, and does Ingrid have your deck? Yeah, okay. So we get, Frez, you do? Great.
Great, thanks. Hi, everyone. And for those I already know, nice to see you again. And for those I don't, nice to meet you. Next slide, please. So, you know, even pre-COVID, for a number of years now, we have been contemplating a vision or a framework that we call Pearson Works. And really what it is it's sort of informing how we work, we the GTAA as an employer, work with all the different employers across the airport, but not only employers, sort of across the whole ecosystem. So how do we collaborate with the union and the labor representatives? How do we collaborate with the employers? How do we collaborate with the post-secondary institutions in different ways to build, upskill, support, and enhance our workforce with a view to making, you know, making Pearson a great place to work, and with a view to as well, you know, once you get that foot in that door and you get that inevitable jet fuel in your brains, interesting, jet fuel in my brain today, jet fuel in your veins, and sort of you can build a career up and across the airport ecosystem. But something that was always a challenge that was certainly obviously also exacerbated during COVID, when a number of the workforce were furloughed or let go, and then, you know, we had to, employers across the airport had to ramp up quite quickly, was that in order to work, particularly airside, you all employees need to have a RAIC, which is a restricted area identity card, which includes a Transport Canada clearance and then also some other fundamental advanced training, particularly around security and safety. And that there was sort of a, there can be quite a delay between getting that offered that job and getting that initial orientation with an employer and then getting that Transport Canada clearance, which was, again, like many things, quite delayed in the immediate pickup after ramp up as the airport and the skies opened back up and has been reduced. But nevertheless, it was sort of always a challenge. So next slide, please. It's a burden on employers. Employers will employ a new hire and then, you know, again, put them through a level of orientation, but they actually can't schedule them to be out on the floor and to do the job that they're hired to do until they get that restricted area identity card. And oftentimes what might happen is that in that time, in that lag time, an employee might find another job. They might just not be interested anymore. So there is a tremendous sort of risk that the employers are adopting as part of this process. And so, you know, as we think about how to build a talent pool, figuring out how to address this lag is sort of something really key to sort of making sure that the airport workforce is as nimble as possible. And so then we started to ask ourselves, how could we build a rake-ready workforce and talent pipeline? And I think the key thing to also remember here is that in order to apply for that Transport Canada clearance, a worker needs to have an employer sponsor them. So they need to say that they will be employed by HMS Host or Swissport or what have you. And that's sort of part of that is instigating that transportation clearance process. So we were thinking, well, what is there something we could do differently to help, you know, to help manage this process? It isn't necessarily about speeding it up. The clearance needs to take what the clearance takes, but how could we sort of remove that lag time? So we are working with our colleagues in government relations and also some employment service agencies to pilot what it might take to build a rake-ready talent pool. So next slide, please. So what would we really be piloting? Well, we would be piloting is a new recruitment model that we would actively work with local employment service agencies and educational institutions to attract a pool of potential candidates. You know, so for our colleague here from Seneca, you know, down the line, there might be a value proposition that where I submit your interest in being a pre-approved recruit for airport jobs. I know the federal government does this. When I started my career, that's how I started, is I applied for a job with the feds, had to go through a screening process, and then I was part of a pool of PM5s or something. I don't remember what it was. IA3. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Don't remember what it was. And then when there were jobs that came up, I got a call for an opportunity. So it's a new recruitment model, sort of rethinking how we recruit. It's a new Transport Canada security clearance model. And so what we are proposing is that the GTA will sponsor these new recruits in lieu of a candidate already having a role and an employer doing the sponsoring. So a recruit also must meet a minimum requirement to move to the sponsored stage, plus, you know, that they must be 18 plus, willing to work shifts. They must have the level of language proficiency. And then we would have a new definition of what it would mean to be rake ready. So candidates would, once identified as a potential candidate, they would immediately submit their transportation clearance application. And while that application is going through, we will work with our employment service agency partner to deliver a airport-ready, rake-ready training program that at its base and its most essential will include airport security and safety awareness, code of conduct, union literacy courses, some DEI training, and that there's an opportunity to expand that training depending on how long it might take to get that clearance to include customer service training, some communication skills, digital literacy, some soft skills that we know are opportunities to upskill and reskill some of the airport workforce. And finally, it's a new model, how to get a job at Pearson. So this is really ideal for that frontline entry-level job. Candidates would be rake ready before they could apply to any jobs. And this pool of candidates with clearance and training would then be made available to hire to airport employers, either via the airport-wide job portal that we're building or through specific job fairs that we would host for these rake ready candidates specifically for employers. And really what it would be is that employer would be able to meet the candidate, identify that they'd be a good candidate, and basically hire them on the spot. And that could be quite transformative. And I think, as I say all this, I think the important thing to remember is that this is not to replace employers hiring candidates and the regular recruitment and hiring models. Rather, this is just a pilot to explore what it would be look like to build a talent pool and to complement all the work that already goes on to recruit and hire staff and staff up at their for airport employers. It certainly isn't meant to be a solution to solve all staffing problems. It's just an opportunity to pilot a different process. Next slide, please. And just to, you know, so we are proposing a pilot to see how this works, to see how long that transportation clearance security takes. We're not asking for special dispensation for these recruits to get a faster clearance or anything like that. Rather, it really just is that, you know, what's changing is that we are sponsoring them, and then that sponsorship will transfer over once they get an employer, and then that's when they can actually get their identity card. But in this, you know, overall, the candidate needs to sort of meet some baseline criteria. Again, this is sort of an ideal process for those frontline jobs. So this is some of the criteria. And in terms of this pilot, and the next slide says this, so I'll repeat myself. We're exploring in 2023, trying three cohorts of 25 recruits, just again to see how it works, to see what we can learn, to see what the process is. So once they start in our recruit and start the transportation clearance and go through the training, you know, do people drop off? Do they stay on? How many of them get hired? We have a vision that, you know, 80% will get hired. And so in this pilot, just for this pilot, we are working with an employment service agency partner. But as again, you can imagine, if it does work, this could be a brilliant model again for recruiting and getting a pool of students ready to get jobs at the airport as they near graduation in aviation studies or anything that, you know, might be of interest to them to get a job at the airport. You could see a number of different audiences that this would really work for to build that pool. But again, just the modest effort in terms of the pilot, we will be working with an employment service agency. The candidate journey is sort of captured here, but again, they would be recruited. They'd have to meet the eligibility. We'd immediately submit their Transport Canada clearance. We see a 3 to 4 week airport employment ready training program. And, you know, we're exploring opportunities with our employment service agency partner about, and, you know, programs where upskilling and reskilling programs for workers where they receive a stipend while they get this training. You know, we're exploring what it would look like to offer an incentive for those candidates who complete the training, because obviously, you know, we certainly don't see the training being, you know, a full, you know, 5 days full, you know, 5 full days for 3 weeks kind of thing, but it will inhibit some people's opportunity to work. So, you know, we want to be able to manage and offer that incentive to offset that. And then once that transportation clearance is confirmed, then, you know, like I said, we will work on some job fairs to sort of match those folks with employers and sort of then begin to sort of monitor and evaluate how that worked and then what we need to learn between cohort one and two. And so that's what we're proposing to do in 2023. We would like to do in 2023 to see how it works. Next slide, please. And so, yeah, so other pilot parameters is that 75 candidates over three cohorts for next year's. We will focus on newcomers, and the opportunity, obviously, also when you're doing targeted recruitment, is that then you can also make sure to add a really important diversity and inclusion lens to who you are recruiting. And we'd like to see the candidates for next year be 50% women, 80% youth, and 50% from our local community as defined by local postal codes. And our goal is that 80% of those who go through the Rake Ready training do in fact get a job and start to work at Pearson and sort of stay engaged and stay on that path. And then, which isn't to say that we might also then monitor them in their careers and paths at the airport as well, and develop an evaluation plan to sort of see is there a benefit to how their career trajectory happens at the airport if they went through this program as well. And so obviously, as we, you know, start with a very modest program and pilot next year, exploring what it could look like to expand that, because if it works, it's going to be a great idea. And if it doesn't work, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And so, we want to make sure to be able to integrate scale up opportunity for it over time as well. And as the program would grow, we would obviously expand that target population. And for example, layer on students and a whole host of other populations as well. Next slide, please. I think that's it. Do I have more to say? That is it. There you go. So that's something that we're curious to see if we can make happen.
And thank you so much, Robin. This is a program that I think we're getting some really positive, strong feedback from already. As Robin said, Michael and Atul have been working on from the government relations standpoint, in that we've put it in our pre-budget submission to the federal government for some longer term funding. But we also, obviously need Transport Canada's approval to kick it off, because it does change the process somewhat. So we do need their approval to even start the pilot. I do see some hands up for questions for you, Robin. So, and I'm sorry, I'm not sure if you can take the slides down, I might be able to see. I'm not sure whose hand was up first. Jonathan, you're on my screen, so maybe I'll go to you first. And I think
I'm second. So
you're second. Who was up first? Was it Savak? Yeah, all right, Savak, you're up first. Savak, we don't hear you if you're speaking. This darn mute button. The bane of our existence. We still don't hear you. Yeah, Jonathan.
I could go into Savak. Finds his voice. So Robin, really good presentation. I do have to say, I'm really interested in learning more about the pilot that you're looking at for 2023, hopefully gets approved, because you're waiting for approval. And, just sharing from a personal experience, when I first moved to Canada, I was a beneficiary of such a program that was catering towards new Canadian engineers. And, really helping them to find their way in the market and then being able to build their career based on it. So I can tell you, programs like this, I've seen them work and work really well. So, I'm really hoping that this ends up getting approved and get the attention and the support it needs. This kind of a program, I think, can be truly instrumental for lots of people. So kudos to you, and really good stuff.
I think we're going to write a testimonial from Jonathan.
I'm weeping. I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I think it is primarily targeted for entry level jobs, but everyone's got to start somewhere. And certainly, identifying folks who might just feel so overwhelmed by the process of even how to apply for a job at the airport, and easing that is actually an ultimate outcome. Absolutely.
Not everybody benefits from a co-op program. So designing a program like this makes a difference, whether you're international or, from here and studied here and so on. Absolutely. What you're doing makes sense.
And, we're still in discussions, but I don't need to be, overtly coy. Like, we are hoping to work with Access Employment, which obviously is a provider that has tremendous experience in trying to build these bespoke programs. So we're really hopeful that it'll be impactful. Thank you.
So Savak is having challenges with his mic. Ingrid, I don't know if there's anything from our end that's something we can do to help with that.
I'll check. Let me see.
Savak, do you want to type your question and we can read it?
Yeah, he did. Is the RECA 5-year residence requirement? I don't think it's... you know what, Lori? I don't know. Do you know? I don't think it's a 5-year residence requirement. Like, you have to have been here for 5 years. I think you do need to be able to, and this is part of one of the challenges that isn't going to be overcome by this pilot, is that you do need to be able to sort of have a bit of a paper trail for where you've been the past 5 years. Okay. So this isn't going to be a refugee hiring program, for example.
No, and there can't be a 5-year residency requirement. I know too many individuals who have come from other places to work at Pearson and have CVs from global airports elsewhere, and if they've come to work for us.
Yeah. So, it's just you need to be able to be traceable for 5 years, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Savik. And, you know, and it may be helpful in terms of your students looking for work. And so thinking about, students coming out of aviation programs, thinking about new immigrants coming to the country. I mean, there's sort of lots of different ways we can, spool this, but really just turning it on its head a little bit and removing that barrier, which is the rake, and having an employer first. It was such a smart idea that Robin and her team came up with. So kudos to them.
It was our friend Melissa. We got to give kudos where it's due. We'll build a statue to her if it's as successful as we hope. Yeah.
Any other questions for Robin? All right. So sorry about your mic, Savik. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Well, see, Lori, you muted yourself.
And I muted myself. So
okay.
There you go.
Just random mutes everywhere. No, okay.
All right.
Great.
Thanks
everybody.
Robin.
I look forward to updating you on this as it goes forward.
All right. So then I think if I can just get back to my agenda. I think that takes us to our regular member updates. So, and wouldn't you know, Savik, here at the top of my page, I was going to go around by list. So, if there's any updates that you're able to share, I don't know if you want to type them in or send them to us. Otherwise, I'm happy to do that. Yeah. I think, Ingrid, do you want to go through voting members first in terms of updates, please?
Sure. So Badar would be first on the list.
Okay, it's my turn to fumble around with the technology. So Brampton Board of Trade has been fairly busy over the last little while in terms of both surveying our members vis-a-vis their priorities and more importantly, their challenges as they're recovering from COVID-related slowdowns over the last little while. And I don't think it should come as a surprise for anybody on this panel that businesses in Brampton continue to list supply chain hurdles, inflation and labor shortages as their main three issues. We're trying to basically work with the newly elected council, as mentioned by Laurie earlier on. We don't have a representative from the council yet on this committee, but we are engaging the newly elected councillors. Earlier on in that discussion, Patrick Brown continues to be the mayor of our city. We have a new deputy mayor, Harkirat Singh, who's a seasoned city councillor, now acting as a regional councillor, and a newly minted regional councillor, Gurpratap Tour, who's now acting as our chair for economic development. So it's going to be a little bit of a time before they're all brought up to snuff in terms of the stance that Brampton Board of Trade has on a number of issues. But transit continues to be a burning issue, along with making sure that we have the right orientation / accommodation infrastructure in place for international students that are coming to Canada. That's becoming a bit of an issue in Brampton. It has been an issue over the recent year and a half. All in all, early days in terms of coordinating things with the new council and getting going, but the council seems motivated to ramp things up rapidly and coordinate things with all stakeholders, including the chamber, to move things forward for local businesses.
All right, thanks, Badar. We're looking forward to seeing who our council rep will be. So hopefully you'll have some influence on making sure we get a good run.
Yeah, sorry. I should just add one other thing. Last couple of years, Brampton Board of Trade did not really do a lot on the international trade side of things, but we are hosting our first in-person networking event on coming Thursday evening, bringing out our local international trade-related businesses and inviting council generals and trade commissioners from both developed and developing markets. So we've got the U.S. and German council general, for instance, in attendance from the developed market side. And then we've got the Israeli, I guess I shouldn't really count Israel as a developing nation, but We've got the Turkish Consul General, the South African Consul General, as well as representatives from a number of business councils that are planning to attend.
All right, so John Davidson.
Hey, John, how's everything in Halton?
Good. It's my turn to fumble around with technology. Okay, got mute on, off. All right. Nice to see you, Laurie. From a Halton region perspective, obviously new council coming in. Our inaugural council meeting is happening tomorrow morning at 10. So that's, I think we've got four or five new council members. So not a lot of changes, although there was a new mayor in the town of Halton Hills with Ann Lawler winning that position. And Rick Bennett has gone off to some form of retirement after 17 years at the helm at the town of Milton. So that's probably our most significant change. From a GTA perspective, I can say that Halton Region has signed on to a three-year deal with Toronto Global for foreign direct investment attraction. We just signed that agreement a couple of weeks ago. So looking forward to that partnership, just going off of Badar's comment around investment and trade. So that will kind of help us with respect to international investment attraction, and we look forward to that relationship. As a municipality in an upper tier government, we have been doing a lot of work, I guess, with response to Bill 23, which is really aimed at housing supply, but does represent some very significant changes in our potentially to our structure with respect to our planning responsibilities. Probably as importantly, if not more importantly, concerns with respect to reductions in development charge revenue for the region, and working through what those changes will be for our municipal coffers, and ensuring that ultimately at the end of the day we can produce housing quickly per the provincial government's very obviously interest in that area. Budget-wise, I think we're looking at a 3% increase on our budget this year, with not including police services. So that's fairly standard fare for us, I guess, in terms of where we've been relative to the rate of inflation. That budget goes in January, and I think also early in the first quarter, we hope to see the GTAA for its more or less annual presentation to our regional council. I think that's it for the cause for me today. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Avery Campbell.
Thank you. Very brief update. We held a very successful series of summits across the country and just through September. We were packed full at every summit, so we were delighted to see that. Travel agencies and travel agents have and are experiencing a significant amount of recovery, though like many others in the travel and tourism ecosystem, that recovery is now showing signs of leveling off. As the hardest hit of the hardest hit sectors, with the most significant labor losses of any travel and tourism sector, we are struggling like others with deep labor shortages, and we're having significant challenges in tackling those issues. We did put those forward as critical in our pre-budget submission and our submission to the federal tourism growth strategy. We're also putting a good amount of focus on potential debt relief programs for travel businesses that continue to face significant struggles and not experience the depth of recovery that some others have experienced. Think, for instance, travel agencies focusing on the China market are not experiencing the same level of recovery that many others are experiencing. So that sums up my update. Thank you.
All right, Stephen Tufts.
Thank you, everyone, and thanks for the presentation. I don't have too much to say today. I will say that the Workers' Council and all the unions at Pearson are happy that the federal labor code was altered and comes into effect that all federally regulated workers, union, non-union, have 10 paid holidays, or sorry, 10 paid sick days coming into effect. So that's something that, of course, we've been pushing for since the pandemic. Ontario made some moves towards 10 days. It's slightly different. It's an accumulated days system in Ontario, but still it shows a little bit of harmonization. So we're happy to celebrate that this week. We also, the unions have been made aware of the Rake Ready project and are supportive of it. Labor shortages are still something that are affecting a lot of industries and vendors related to Pearson that's persistent. So anything that can fill jobs quickly is something that's appreciated because workers only can work so much overtime. The only reservations we had, and they're more technical, is any system that would slow down the processing of rakes for workers already working who still haven't had their permanent rakes processed because they are that far behind. And it's a lot of time and energy to get these rakes processed and at the rate that they were a few years ago. It's always been a slow process, but now it's been quite slow during the labor shortage and as people start hiring in large numbers again. And the second issue is we were really happy to see with the Rake Ready program some ability to educate newcomer workers on union labor rights at the entry level process, because I mean, that's important, especially for folks who might not be as educated with the labor market system in Canada. So that's all for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Now the City of Toronto. So I'm not sure if Councillor Crisanti or Councillor Morley is going to provide the update.
I can update as resident. I just don't have very much.
Hi, Shane. Nice to see you.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you proceed, and then maybe if either Councillor Crisanti or Councillor Morley have an update, then they can follow.
Yeah, no, I just stepped away. I just came back, I'm sorry, I missed. But go on. I don't want to interrupt. I think someone else is speaking, but.
Okay. Shane is the City of Toronto resident representative, so he was going to go first, and then if you have any updates from the city, please, you can follow.
Yeah, as a resident, I still love the City of Toronto. I still love its airport. I've had mixed experiences, but I think it's improving. And I think it's easy for people to throw stones at it. But I think in light of all the challenges, it's doing a very good job. And it's still getting people where they want to go. And that's about it for my update, other than just continued support for our airport and those who run it.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate that. Councillor Crisanti, any updates from the City of Toronto from sort of council perspective?
There we go. Can you hear me now, Laurie? Okay, good. Work.
Yes.
Well, no, I didn't come prepared with any formal update, Laurie, but I think everyone knows that the City of Toronto has got a number of new faces on council, and we're all very excited to, and we welcome all the new councillors and Councillor Morley. I believe she's on this call, so we welcome her as well. She'll be attending the GTAA meeting or this meeting with me regularly. And of course, you know, we face comparable challenges that everybody else faces across the province. We look forward to working very closely with the airport and your office to do what we can to support what needs to get done to make sure that we give our passengers the best possible experience at the airport. And some of the challenges that come up too when it comes to some of the development close to the airport, we have a lot of exciting things happening on the development stage. As we know, the Woodbine Entertainment Complex, the 750 acres over at the casino And then the new casino, there's I'll be getting updates on that in a few days. But that's coming along nicely. There's, I think, by mid-23 is last I heard, the new casino will be open. The two five-star hotels will be open. Entertainment venue, all those things will be up and running before the end of 23. So we're thrilled about that, and we're hoping to get that transit connection as well that we're working very hard for. That's something I spearheaded, started before I left council in 2018. It took this short coffee break here. I'm back now. I want to see that happening once again. The goal there is to extend the current LRT that terminates at Humber College down two more stops to the new GO station that will be hopefully will be underway and open sooner than later, and then from there a direct line to the airport as well. That's really the most exciting development project, I think, that's going to be great for people that are traveling, that maybe on our overnight stays where, you know, they wondering what can they do, what's the closest place they can go to for some entertainment. Well, that's just a few minutes away over at the Woodbine, at the new Woodbine Casino. So which will be, a destination place, and people from all over the world will be coming to see the great things that are going on there. So I look forward to reporting more on the progress of that development and the transit side, of working together with GTAA on making sure we do get that direct line to the airport as well. That's all I got for now.
That's a lot. So thank you. It's great.
Thank you, Lori.
If you're on.
Yeah, the line, thank you. Thank you so much, Lori. And it's wonderful to join this great group. And thank you to those who presented earlier and everyone who's participating on the call. I look forward to learning a lot. And of course, our ward is very close to the airport. So we do have some special interest in that. I'll just add to Councillor Crescenti's updates to say that the City of Toronto, similar to colleagues in other regions who've also commented with respect to some of the recent provincial bills. We are currently grappling with that as a city and with our planning staff to ensure that there are, you know, we can maintain mechanisms for growth to pay for growth. So those are some things that we were chatting about today at Executive, for example, and will be coming forward. Our next meeting of City Council is next week, December 14th, for anybody who is interested. And certainly Councillor Crescenti and I are excited to be a voice for this group and a liaison between City Council and the great work of the GTAA. So thanks for having me. I have some staff member, Esley, who's joining as well on the call and who will also be a presence going forward. We'll make sure to stay connected for future updates and to keep this group posted. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Councillor, and congratulations on both your elections. And Esley, welcome as well to you to the committee.
Thank you. Hello.
Okay, so Eileen.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you, and thank you for the presentations earlier in the session. Most of the updates from the Toronto Board of Trade are forward-looking at this time, so a couple of big events that might be of interest to the group that they are working on. The first is the Business Competitiveness Gateway to Growth Summit, taking place on February 8th. This will be a full day in-person around 400 attendee events, so one of the larger scale event from the Toronto Board of Trade, discussing how to maintain Toronto's global competitiveness in a newly digitized age. And they have indicated that it will incorporate some of the work from the Pearson Project and Zones economic potential through the sustainable developments of the area's industry and workforce supporting infrastructure. The second event is in March, and that is the annual dinner, the kind of flagship Toronto Board of Trade event. I don't have the precise date in March when that will take place, but they are currently offering their early bird pricing for board members and non-members who want to register for tickets or for a full table on or before January 5th, 2023. So apologies that I don't have the precise date in March for that one, but I'm sure it might be on their website at this point. And they're also the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee are currently kind of doing some outreach to members to finalize their agenda for next year and determine meeting dates. So they had one session a few days ago and they'll have another one next week to really lock down their plans for 2023. And that's it from the Toronto Board of Trade.
Jonathan.
Thank you, Ingrid. And yes, good evening to everyone. So since the municipal elections, we've had 6 new members of regional council. So that's the change in York Region. And similar to Halton, we've signed on to the 3-year agreement with Toronto Global. So we're really looking forward to that. And, you know, with that in mind, we did attend in early November the Web Summit in Portugal. And that was done in collaboration with the City of Toronto, Toronto Global, Marca Montvan up in New York Region, and a number of other GTA stakeholders. Destination Toronto was there as well. And really, we went with that broader GTA message of this is a great place to, you know, take your business here to the GTA, invest and grow. So that was our message, and we know, I think, you know, we had a really good presence there of raising awareness and continuing to push the GTA message out there. So that was a big thing for us. We also have similar concerns, as was mentioned by John from Halton, about Bill 23 and the uncertainty and so on around that. So that continues to happen. And also from an ECDEV, economic development perspective, there was a mention earlier about jobs and acquisition of talent. And so in some preliminary conversations I've had with some of, you know, the business networks here in the region, we continue to hear that the talent challenge is top of mind. And they're talking about acquisition, development, retention of talent, because it is still very, very competitive in terms of getting those you know, access to the right talent. So it's a tight talent market. So that's something that we continue to pay attention to. And in fact, we had participated in the Elevate Festival in October with the City of Toronto, as well as City of Markham and others, showcasing, you know, talent opportunities where we gave companies an opportunity to talk about, you know, the hiring that they're doing in order to try and be, you know, more visible to the right talent. So that continues to be something that we're looking at going forward. That's it.
Thank you. And last of the...
A theme across the board is talent and access to talent.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, we're all struggling with it. Sorry, Ingrid, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. So the last voting member is Savik. I don't know if your microphone's working yet.
I see that he's typed in a message as well, noting that it's going to be back next semester. And so he'd like to follow up on the Rake Ready pool with us. So I'm thinking maybe not. All right, before we go to the resource members, maybe I'll just do a quick update as the GTA voting member. So, you know, coming out of the pandemic and recovery, you know, as bumpy as it's been, it's also been a time when we've been working very, very hard, heads down, to try and put together the next 10-year strategic plan for the airport. And so we're looking to sort of roll out and start to talk more about what that looks like and what that means in terms of priorities for us, in terms of how we build back and grow the airport, in terms of what investments required. We talked about looking for investments through reinvestment of rent. But at the same time, we think there's a need for a significant investment going back into airport infrastructure. And so we'll start to roll out more specifics about that vision early next year. And so we'll look forward to bringing forward a presentation to this committee, probably maybe in our next meeting in January, if we're at that point by then. I just wanted to pick up, and obviously we're, you know, Atul and Michael already talked about holiday readiness, so that's sort of our short-term top of mind issues right now, and also pick up the transit discussion that Councillor Crisanti raised. So we very much continue to think and believe that there needs to be better transit connections to Pearson as part of our growth strategy. We know as we move back to a 50 million plus passenger airport, having better ground connections through transit are going to be needed to be part of our success going forward, and part of that access to talent solution as well. So we're really pleased to just let you know that funding for the Eglinton Crosstown West Crosstown has been confirmed both through the federal and provincial governments. And so that work is advancing. And that would be to hopefully next step would be moved towards capital funding for a connection from Renforth Station up to the airport. But at this point, it's to complete the studies to get to procurement. Great to hear that there's movement afoot, Councillor Crisanti, in terms of the Finch extension as well. That's always been part of the picture and to make that connection as well. And so we are protecting for a transit center of some note in our future development plans. And so we'll continue to work and advance and talk about the need for better transit connections at Pearson. So that's really my updates. Should we see if any of our resource members have updates?
Yeah, so the first on the list would be Amanda Chum.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for your presentations. Really good to hear it, how you're approaching Christmas holidays, and really exciting to hear about YYZ Express and all the things that you've been doing. The Rake Ready program, heard about that before, but it was really good to still hear the presentation from Robin, so thank you for that. No real updates for me, but I'm always here to hear and listen about your ideas, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your strategic plans going forward and as well, and also excited to hear about the transit proposals as well. Thank you.
Okay, next, Susan Acton-Gervais.
Yes, good afternoon, and apologies for not putting on my camera today. I do have a few updates, if you permit. One of the things I wanted to say is just adding on to what was shared in your earlier presentations on some of your messaging. We certainly share a joint goal of ensuring all travelers have seamless travel experience, and the objective, as you know, is to ensure a safe, accessible, environmentally sustainable, expeditious, efficient travel experience for all travelers. And I think I should stop there and just introduce myself perhaps to some of the people who might not know who the National Airlines Council is. We are Canada's airline association that represents Canada's largest passenger carrying and we represent Air Canada, WestJet, Air Transat, and Jazz Aviation. And just to piggyback a little bit on what was presented earlier, three of the key priority areas that the NACC believe would have the greatest impact on improving the air travel experience in Canada are very much aligned with what was presented earlier. And improving cross-border travel. So several points along the cross-border travel journey, in our view, need to be improved. And we certainly shared those views with the Minister of Transport last week, who hosted an sector recovery summit, and specifically an effective resolution and full resolution, I might add, to the impasse with the United States on Nexus must be found. We have seen some movement, and that is great news, but we're certainly looking for this program to be fully restored. The Trusted Traveler pilot programs also must be rolled out at all airports across the country. The use of opt-in biometrics and other forms of digitizations for Canada customs check-in screening processes, etc. And we need the Government of Canada regulations to keep up in order for us as an industry to be able to enable leveraging of these technologies. So that is a bit of a constraint there that we're seeing. And the U.S. pre-clearance process in Canadian airports must have the resources they require to successfully perform these functions as well. And all of these measures that airlines and airport are ready to work on with the government departments and agency to implement as quickly as possible. And in fact, NAC, we will be meeting with the U.S. Ambassador on December 16 to discuss some of these issues in more detail. Another thing that we're calling for from the Government of Canada is the introduction of a shared accountability and service standard. The current air passenger protection regulations, known as the APPR, were recently renewed, new regulations came out effective September 8, and it holds only one entity in the air travel ecosystem accountable for delays or disruptions, and that is the airlines. And we know that the airlines, we do have a role to play in some of these delays and cancellations, but we're not the only, obviously, stakeholder in the aviation ecosystem. In fact, we're customers to it. So NAC's view is that every organization along the ecosystem is responsible for a seamless customer journey. And as such, in our view, Canada needs to establish a collaborative approach via an accountability framework that ensures each player in the aviation ecosystem meets expectations. And it'd be supported by common agreements on minimum service standards, if you will. And that type of accountability framework would ultimately lead to what we're all working together towards, which is a better traveler experience, and it would reduce the number of passengers seeking recourse via the APPR. And then last, the Government of Canada conducting a review of all fees and service charges, including reinvesting in Canada's airports and aviation system infrastructure. And this was mentioned earlier as well in some of the briefings. And there are a significant number of fees and service charges that are imposed on air travel in Canada, and navigation fees, security fees, of course, rents, municipal payments, to the point where fees make up over 35% of the cost of a flight, which makes Canada one of the most expensive countries from which to travel with by air. And there was actually a Globe and Mail article on December 2nd that packages that together. So we're certainly looking for divestitures from the federal government. Airports have invested over $30 billion in infrastructure. They've also paid for $6 billion in rent to the federal treasury. So to ensure Canada's airports and airlines remain efficient and competitive and can support a seamless passenger journey, as well as can support longer-term sustainability and decarbonization priorities, we're asking the federal government for them to review the fees and service charges, including air travel, with an eye of making it more competitive. And in I would just add to that, with such a thorough review of infrastructure reinvestment, Canada's air sector competitiveness without such a review, it would continue to be weakened and the travel experience would not be improved. And so one last thing, and I obviously could say a lot more on that, and I realize I'm keeping everybody between their dinner here, perhaps. So I would add is that NAC is keen to work with airports and other stakeholders to implement climate change strategies as outlined in the Federal Aviation Climate Action Plan. And a critical component of this effort is to create a domestic sustainable aviation fuels market in Canada, including the necessary delivery infrastructure. Airlines and airports will need to work together, of course, with government to ensure climate change objectives can be realized as quickly as possible. And that is front and center of many of our priorities. And I'll just stop there, but, I'll just say that Canada's airlines are eager to increasingly help grow Canada's economy and enhance its global competitiveness. And by working together as partners, we're confident that our shared goals can be achieved. So thank you for the opportunity to share these remarks.
Yeah, Suzanne, thank you very much. There is no question. There's so much alignment in terms of what we've been talking to the government about, in terms of how we come out of this recovery as a sector and some of the challenges, again, always with the passenger in mind. I mean, they're the primary customer. We're all sort of trying to make sure that that seamless journey and those cancellation delays aren't sort of part of their journey. You mentioned the fees and charges, and that's probably something we could dive into a little bit more at a future agenda. One of the things that we've talked to this committee about in the past is, just where airports costs factor into a ticket price, which in Canada is less than 5% of a ticket price is actually attributed to airports, given our user pay model. But we could probably dive into that a little bit more in terms of how cost structures compare in Canada versus the US, because it's not apples to apples. So it's probably something we'll put on a future agenda. But thanks for that, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Ingrid, who's next?
The last one is Bram Westfall or Jeffrey from MTO. I'm not sure which one is going to do an update, if they have one.
I can take it. It's Bram Westfall here, and I appreciate the presentations. They were great. We don't actually have an update at this time, but always happy to be a resource member.
All right, thank you. And we do have Mr. Ivan Batty. He's a resident of Durham Region, and just wondering if you have anything that you'd like to share.
Yeah, I would, Lori. Thanks. I didn't get to your last meeting. I'm sorry for that. My issue is the ongoing concern that I've expressed to you about the relationship of Oshawa and Pickering. Pickering has said publicly in their paperwork that that airport, their airport, is going to be built in 2036. Based on that information, Oshawa staff have dutifully gone forward to the Minister of Transport with two reports. One of them is a carve-out, a breakup of the airport, largely based upon their $10 million debt. And the other one is to go forward with a noise set of restrictions, not dissimilar to those that you have. However, they have no noise. In reviewing the paperwork that your GTA put out, 2036 is a canard. However, on the Jan Van Toff is a director of your operation, and he partakes in an annual review with Durham Region of what's going on at your place. I know you know all about it. You've attended it. And on June the 6th, 2018, he said, "We have no concerns about an airport constructed in Pickering." And on June the 4th, 2019, he said, in response to a direct question about the sixth runway, "No, I confirm we have no plans for new runways." Now, both of those relate to Article 44, which I'm sure you know, but I'm going to read it for your people, if you'll give me the time. "If the tenant is continuously and actively meeting any capacity demand requirements for an airport and aviation services at the airport, the landlord will not, that's will not, construct and operate during the term an airport as a major international airport within 75 kilometers from the point of perimeter of the lands." Now, as you also know, Pickering is within the 75 kilometers, and there have been a large variety of statements of capacity. However, the current situation at your airport, and I'm going to quote directly from your airside system master plan, page 41, "The sixth runway was approved as part of an assessment and has not been built. We will continue to monitor demands." And later on, it says, "We will continue to protect the sixth runway." So the basic question is, do you continue to protect the sixth runway? And the second question is Article 44 up for being blown off? If you pardon me for that, are you standing by Article 44? Because I understand that Article 44 is basically a moat protection for your bondholders, of which and debt holders, which currently amounts to $7 billion. Notwithstanding that Article 44 is in all national airport systems, and the combined debt has recently been reported as over $15 billion. I cannot see that you can support that, but I'm willing to listen to anything you have to say. And as to plans for the sixth runway, I'd also like to know what your position is.
Sure. Well, thanks for your questions, Mr. Batty. In terms of our master plan, you're right. It does contain protection for a sixth runway. And we, at this point, have no plans to build that sixth runway, but it continues to exist in our master plan. And that's what master plans do, right? They set forward a plan for the future. It goes out to 2037, I believe. And that is a plan that we're required through our ground lease to review and update it every 10 years, at least every 10 years. And so that is the plan we have today. But there is no active plans right now to build a sixth runway. In terms of your other question, a lot has changed over the course of a pandemic. Aviation and demand and our traffic has changed significantly. And you know as well as we do, it's not the decision of the GTAA if an airport's built in Pickering. No. That is the decision of Transport Canada. So I don't know if Transport Canada, Amanda, if you would like to tackle Article 44 question on behalf of the Government of Canada in terms of what the leases mean.
I'd have to get back to you on that one. Actually, the Pickering one isn't actually under my file, but I don't actually have any updates on the Pickering file at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a decision for the GTA to make, Mr. Batty, and you know that. That's not a decision that we make. That is the Government of Canada's decision. There are clauses within leases as well, you understand. And so we can get back to you.
I understand.
Mike, you're on screen. I don't know if there was something you wanted to add.
Yeah, I understand perfectly well about the minister's decision. But I cannot understand why any board member would make a comment like that. They're off the wall. They're unprofessional. And they have ethics issues. And I think that you should, this committee should be taking that up with the board.
All right. Well, we'll make sure that your comments are noted in our meeting minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori.
All right. I think we have covered everyone who is here today. I think the final thing really is just to remind you that to watch for an email about next year, the meeting dates that will be scheduled. We're going to ask you about your interest in person versus virtual going forward. We look forward to seeing new members coming from the city of Brampton as well. And with that, I wish you all happy holidays, good health and celebration with family and friends. And if you're traveling, pack your patience, make use of advanced declaration. If you're heading into the US, it's called mobile passport control. And if you're on your way back in, please use the advanced declaration in Canada because it will help, and we'll hopefully work through the Nexus issues and make sure you can all get your Nexus cards renewed or your new applications processed. So that's our goal, right, Suzanne?